We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, this work shit's gotta go. People, how the hell are ya? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke from sunny San Diego. I'm your stoner extraordinaire, Greg Carlwood. And today on THC, we got a real treat. We're talking with Jamie Hanshaw about mind control and social programming techniques of Disney and the Hollywood elite, one of my favorite conspiracy subjects. Jamie does a lot of great stuff, and she is a significant other of another recent guest, Freeman Fly. So if you liked that episode, this one complements it very well. If you like this THC, please share it with your people or subscribe, or most importantly, give me a review on iTunes or YouTube or wherever you listen. The algorithms that recommend new shows to people use those likes and reviews, so please, I've got a couple thousand people listening and 29 fucking iTunes reviews. I can't live like this, guys. So please, hook it up while you're listening. I'd love you for it. And of course, we're still continuing on with the THC Money Bomb, where I'm going to total up the donations received by episode 85, and half will help support the show, and the other half will be gifted back to one of you guys. Of course, to keep it legal, you don't have to donate to win, it just makes the winning so much sweeter. You can get the full details at thehighersidechats.com/donate, and let's get this party started in that rapid-fire THC way that I love so much. Here's my man Rob Davin of Dark Space TV with this week's news in your higher education. Then on the other side, we're talking with Jamie Hanshaw. The floor is yours, Rob. What's the good word?
Thanks, Greg. This week, we're going to start off talking about some Earth changes. Cyclone Cleopatra. Italy declares state of emergency after 18 killed in Sardinia. A state of emergency has been declared after at least 18 people were killed in a cyclone on the Italian island of Sardinia. In the worst storm in decades, rivers burst their banks, cars were swept away, and bridges collapsed in the towns of Obelia and near Nuoro. Among the dead is a family of four who were in their ground floor apartment when floodwaters came rushing through. Also in Earth Changes headlines, tornadoes and powerful storms hit the U.S. Midwest, killing eight. Dozens of tornadoes and intense thunderstorms swept across the U.S. Midwest on Sunday, leaving at least eight people dead and unleashing powerful winds that flattened entire neighborhoods, flipped over cars, and uprooted trees. And now focusing on Japan's nuclear nightmare, David Suzuki's Fukushima warning video. It's dire and scary. David Suzuki, who is an ecological protester here in Canada, has issued a scary warning about Japan's Fukushima nuclear power plant, saying that if it falls in a future earthquake, it's bye-bye Japan, and the entire west coast of North America should be evacuated. An excerpt of the talk shows that Suzuki was outlining a frightening scenario that would result from the destruction of the nuclear power plant. Fukushima is the most terrifying situation I can imagine, he said. Three of the four plants were destroyed in the earthquake and in the tsunami. The fourth had been so badly damaged that the fear is if there's another earthquake of seven above, that building will go and all hell breaks loose. And I just like to point out, Greg, David Suzuki isn't known for being a fearmonger. So if he's coming out and putting his mouth out there, he's probably got a good reason to be worried. So it's something we should be keeping our eyes on. And finally, one of the lesser known disasters of the nuclear age. In late October 1960, about 150 families around the Soviet Union got letters notifying them that a loved one had died in a plane crash. It took 30 years for the public to be informed of what actually happened, and it's known as the Nedlin catastrophe, and it's one of the most chilling accidents of the nuclear age. Basically what happened, the Russian military was testing a new ICBM, and they moved it out onto the launch pad. In the process, a corrosive fuel actually managed to link and cover the launch pad in fumes and explosive liquids. They decided they were going to do a test of the engines. Well, nobody had noticed that this fuel was leaking. And at about 6:45 in the evening, the engines came to life. The combustion hit the fuel. The rocket exploded in a fireball that killed as many as 250 people on the launch pad. The wall of flame melted tar on a nearby road, sticking some people in place as fire moved towards them. Some people made it to the perimeter fence, only to be caught up in barbed wire. As a last resort, some people flung themselves into ditches, out of the way of the flames, but then to be poisoned by the fumes of the ignited fuel. About 150 people died, some of them immediately, some of them days after suffering in the hospital. And that's all I got for you this week. Make sure to come over and check out darkspace.tv and sign up for our Plus membership. Your support helps us make great exclusive content, and we have some really cool stuff coming for you. So check it out, darkspace.tv. Thanks a lot, Greg. I'll see you next week.
All right, Higher Side Chatters, today is going to be another deep level look at magic, sorcery, mind control, and the way they've been injected into pop culture and entertainment by the magic wand wavers in Hollywood and the Disney dynasty to manipulate our minds into a sick addiction of petty consumerism, which provides the financial fuel that ultimately gives them their power and allows their stranglehold to grow stronger. It's a messed up situation we've got ourselves in, people, and today's guest is going to help us shine a light on these dark arts. Her name is Jamie Hanshaw, and she's been studying this stuff for many years along with her partner Freeman, who was my guest just a few shows back in episode 78. The two of them have laid out their radical research in a magazine book called Weird Stuff, Operation Culture Creation, and I couldn't be more psyched to talk about it. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Yeah, thanks for being here. This is one of my favorite topics in the conspiracy world, and Weird Stuff is one of the best explorations of mind control and pop culture that I've seen recently. It's really awesome. I also grew up as an only child in the Midwest and consumed so much of this media and pop culture, so learning about the subtext of sorcery and mind control embedded in it is just fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think that I wanted to write something that people like us could share with the skeptics in their life, you know, those people who aren't really willing to look at a lot of videos or read a lot of books, but I wanted to make something that they could put in their hands and just say, here, flip through this, and then maybe we can talk later. So it's fully illustrated, and it's got a lot of color pictures, and it's in a tabloid magazine format, which is easy for a lot of people to digest. I kind of made it sort of like a trestle board in a way, where I was highlighting everything that I think needed further study and independent study, and just past that you could open up, you know, gateway conspiracies to get people just introduced to these hard subjects.
Yeah, I mean, they are some pretty deep gateways too. A lot of the stuff is way down there. I love it. But you know, you do a great job in Weird Stuff of giving the history of magic and mind control in media and advertising. Let's start off there. I mean, how do we end up against such a finely tuned monster?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we can go into the history of Hollywood. I talk a lot about in Weird Stuff about, you know, Thomas Edison and the creators of Hollywood, Carl Lamel.
Yeah, I mean, there's that bit about the one of the first times it was used publicly, subliminal advertising, is they flashed what was it, Enjoy Coke in between mm-hmm. commercials, and there was an mm-hmm. actual effect on the audience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like 50%, I think they saw their sales go up after they just did that. But so, yeah, we are tracking a little bit of the subliminal, a little bit of the hidden symbols. But what we found is that the overt message of the actual art piece is more perverted than any subliminal could even come close to.
That's true, too. Another thing you talk about is just the history of TV and video entertainment. I thought this was really interesting because I never made the connection before between old peep show Nickelodeons and the Nickelodeon TV network and their practice right. of quote-unquote sliming kids and that being symbolic of ejaculating on children. That's pretty sick stuff.
Right. So yeah. So the first Nickelodeons, like we were going over in part one with the in the chapter called Sorcerers and Robots about the history of Hollywood. And you're absolutely right. The Nickelodeons were the first kind of vaudeville peep show where you could pay a nickel to see a girly dance or whatever. And this became, you know, the biggest kids television network on the planet. And you're right, their slime or their gack or whatever you want to call it looks exactly like an ejaculation.
Yeah, years and years of watching Nickelodeon and watching that happen, and I never thought about that, but that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. You know, once you see it, it seems so obvious, but it I don't know, I guess mm-hmm. it resonates in the subconscious on some level.
Yeah, and then you can just Google any Nickelodeon Eye in the Pyramid, and you see a lot of their logos feature that, you know, the eye, the all-seeing eye that everybody attributes to the Illuminati.
Yeah, it's, I guess a lot of these attacks, these psychological attacks through media seem to be targeted at kids, you know, whether we're talking about Disney or Nickelodeon.
Well, in their, you know, empire building, they have to get the children first or it'll never work. You know, Hitler went for straight for the kids. Anybody who's trying to build any kind of communist or socialist or any of these ISTAs regimes is going to go for the children first because, you know, if they get them significantly brainwashed by the time they're 5 or 6, then they own them for the rest of their life.
And TV screens are just so damn hypnotic, too. I mean, I see so many people just stare at them and zone out. You know, I'll be talking to someone and they'll be like, what'd you say? You know, I'll go on for like 5 minutes and they're staring at the TV.
Right. Well, they've pretty much perfected the flicker rate. And I don't have the details on this, but it's the perfect rate to get you into the alpha or really relaxed kind of hypnotic state where they can just preach right into your subconscious whatever they want to say.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's like there's a science behind it that's like literally for design to right. get you in that mode.
And then why do you think that they've made the entire country go to this high def, you know, different type of...
yeah, the digital band.
Right. So it's just, you know, tightening up and perfecting the digital aspect of the mind control, the electronic mind control.
Man. So, I mean, let's talk about Hollywood a little bit. I mean, many people have heard that the name comes from the lore of a magic wand being made of holly, and the Hollywood is how they cast their spells. You know, you make a great point in the book about Hollywood controlling the quote-unquote stars, you know, which is sort of symbolic of controlling the universe itself, which is an interesting analogy, you know. I never really thought about it that way.
Right. So from the beginning of time, you have people who are tracking the movements of the planets and the stars, and they become the shamans because they can predict future events. And so they're the most powerful person in the tribe. If you can predict when an eclipse is going to happen, then you have this, you know, magical power of prophecy that you can lord over the rest of the people who don't know about the science. So, yeah, exactly. They want to control this movement of what they, you know, they call the stars, these people, and the public follows along because throughout history, we've always used stars for navigation. We've used it for seasons, for keeping time, and, you know, also for astrological, spiritual purposes. And so they don't want people looking at the cosmology anymore. They want them looking at these mind control robots that they put out there for people to follow.
Yeah, different kind of stars. Man, well, they've been doing this kind of stuff. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you mentioned that the holly was a sacred tree to the druids who used it to make their magic wands, and you're absolutely right. And then holly was also sacred to the goddess Hel, the Norse goddess Hel of the Underwood. So you have that connection as well.
Interesting. Well, yeah, they've been fine-tuning this for years, perfecting it, and... I mean, you've been researching it for a while. Tell me about some of the techniques that Hollywood is using on us these days.
Well, I guess the biggest area of my research, and the one that's going to come out in part two of Weird Stuff, is I'm going to be talking a lot about the MKUltra and the Monarch program. So this is, the beginning of the perfection of mind control slaves in Nazi Germany, brought over with these scientists in Project Paperclip, like Ewan Cameron and Joseph Mengele, working with the U.S. government and the CIA to basically traumatize people so that their personality will split into different alters and they can control what these alters do and say. So by placing these people in key positions like government and entertainment, sports, politics, churches, pretty much anything that you can infiltrate, they've used these monarch program slaves.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of female celebrities are apparently victim to this, right?
Yeah, you can, once you learn the keys, you can kind of tell who has more signs and symbols than the other. Obviously, they're going to use them on the big ones. You know, the first thing that you're going to need to look for is a monarch butterfly, because this is one of the key animals that tipped off scientists that knowledge could be passed on through genetic memory. So for these people that have gone through this monarch program, you're going to see them with butterflies. You're going to see them doing the one eye, covering up the one eye symbolism. You're going to see them having Alice in Wonderland symbolism, Wizard of Oz around them, checkerboard floors, black and white, anything that inverts reality or really blurs the lines between what's real and what's fake is what they're going for.
Interesting. And a lot of these apparently... these victims of this monarch program, these female celebrities that are in that camp, mm-hmm. Some of them have ties to the Mickey Mouse Club. Is that true?
A lot of them do. Sure. You know, you got Christina Aguilera, you've got Justin Timberlake, you've got Britney Spears, Carrie Russell, pretty much anybody who went through the Mouseketeers in the 90s grew up to be some kind of, A-list celebrity.
Man, it's so weird. I mean, enough coincidences and isolated incidents should create a pattern, you know?
Well, I keep finding this over and over, and as soon as I start to feel like a crazy person for believing that this could actually happen and, you know, who's involved and how deep it goes, I get more confirmation. You know, I run across this random commercial for Hello Kitty and MAC makeup, and it's got this girl in a type of Alice in Wonderland inverted reality. She goes through the portal, and then she meets some sadomasochistic dancers with Hello Kitty heads, and they have some kind of dance orgy. And so you can just go down the list of all these elements that I outline in part two in my chapter about trauma-based mind control, and they're all there, right? And they keep showing up over and over again. You can go to a good website that just outlines the entire thing a lot in picture form. Vigilant Citizen does a great job in just showing like symbolic pictures upon symbolic pictures. Like, it's statistically impossible for all of these things to be present in one theme.
Yeah, that's a great website.
If there's not something behind it.
I've been wanting to have him on the show. I've been meaning to email him because he does put together a lot of that great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But let's dissect Disney a bit. I mean, you got a lot of great history on Disney in part one of Weird Stuff. I mean, how did that company go from one guy drawing mice and ducks to the multi-billion-dollar monster they are today? I mean, is it by using a lot of this type of magic?
Well, I think he was recruited into the FBI. I mean, I know he was recruited into the FBI by J. Edgar Hoover because he always had this... doubt about his parentage ever since he went to join the army and he wasn't old enough, and they had trouble finding his, or that his parents told him that they couldn't produce his birth certificate, and there was a big issue about it, and so he had to falsify his record so he could join the Red Cross and go to World War One. So all throughout his life, he's having these shadows of doubts that, you know, maybe his mother's not his real mother or something to this effect. And I think this is what really got him ensnared with the FBI, because they promised him that they would look into the matter and find some absolution for him. And so at this point in his life, he's supposed to be some kind of paragon of morality for Hollywood, because in the early era of Hollywood in the 20s and 30s, there was sort of a backlash from the public because all the movies were coming out where they thought were very smutty and full of it just never changes. It's mm-hmm. the same, right? So yeah. They kind of used Disney along with the B'nai B'rith, put him out in front and saying this is the model of morality and family values in Hollywood. So it would have been a big scandal for him to find out that, you know, his perfect life and his parentage was in question. So he wanted this secret and he wanted to know. Mm-hmm. But Walt Disney was a really interesting character too, because he has this history of abuse as a child. He was worked very hard. He was beaten daily until one day his brother Roy told him to stand up to his dad and put his hands on him back and not let him hit him. He did, and his father never beat him again after that. But wow. So he's being worked so hard on his paper route, on the farm. He's always trying to regain this lost sense of innocence in childhood, would find in a lot of people who've been victimized and their innocence has been taken away from him, like Michael Jackson, you know, who built Neverland because he wanted to regain his lost childhood. So this is kind of what driving Disney with his animation and his cartoons and his like perfect fairy story version of life, because he never had one.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But I mean, based on the way he ran the company, though, he was a bit of a dick, wasn't he?
Mm. There's numerous complaints about Walt and the way that he ran the studio. I mean, he kept the women in the inking department. He thought that animation and management was no place for women. So he basically locked them up, having them do the most tedious, hard, time-consuming job there was, which is the coloring of the cells, you know, the inking. He was reported to be a rabid anti-Semite. His staff actually formed a strike against him in the early days. What else? Oh, he was the only one. He ran his studio just like, you know, typical Nazi hierarchical fashion. And he was the dictator, and everybody else had to do what he said. And there was no egalitarianism going on at Disney Studios under Walt. He was reported to have been obsessed with the buttocks, and his coworkers reported that he could talk about TERS for 30 minutes straight. And you can see this in a lot of early cartoons, that a child's rear end is the butt of many jokes. You know, there's a one where
a lot of wiggling and shaking.
Yeah.
Of the ass in Disney movies.
Exactly. You know, watch these little cartoon butts. Everyone had to draw that. And this is Walt's favorite part of the whole story, right? There's this Christmas special where the whole butt of the story was the kid couldn't keep his pajama pants up, and he got a chamber bot from Santa for Christmas.
What a weirdo.
Yeah. So he's got some psychological issues. I don't think he is the innocent, you know, happy-go-lucky person that everyone makes him out to be. He had psychological troubles performing with his wife on their honeymoon. If you've ever read a biography about Disney, you would know that he was very conflicted, and he had a lot of demons.
Right.
He actually, you know, had a nervous breakdown, and he gave the whole studio over to Roy Disney to run while he went on a trip to South America for the government, because if he was having a nervous breakdown because of all the pressures. And so I'm linking up the government, or the CIA, the FBI, with Walt Disney, because I'm trying to prove that they're using Disneyland, Disney World as part of this monarch programming and also meta programming of the entire population. So they use the parks and things for actual trauma sessions, and then they use the, you know, the park itself to program the population in a different way.
Yeah, I love the stuff about him working with government agencies, being an informant for outing communists during the Red Scare era. And I never really gave much thought to that whole era of blacklisting communists from Hollywood and why they went for Hollywood. But it makes so much more sense in the context of knowing how powerful messages are that come in the form of entertainment. So you right. got to make sure you have the right content creators in place.
Well, the Nazis learned propaganda cartoons from Walt Disney, not the other way around.
Yeah. It's funny with I've heard you talk about toys too. You know, you got a little bit of that in Weird Stuff. And the most popular toys growing up for kids, for boys, have always had a war theme. You know, first it was the Green Army Men, then the G.I. Joe, and now it's Call of Duty and Battlefield video games. I mean, do you think that's just coincidental, or is that just another form of manipulation that they're involved in?
Well, now you've got Marvel, which is all the superheroes world owned yes. by Disney. So they're going to be teaming up to create what we call the Princess Warrior programming, you know, the ultimate consumer lady, narcissistic princess, and the warrior who has to go out and fight in the field of economics or on the actual battlefield. Take your pick, you know, it's a war zone either way.
Disney also owns Electronic Arts.
So, yeah, and Disney also owns EA, Electronic Arts, which puts
yeah,
out the
video game.
The video games like Call of Duty, or I don't know if they do Call of Duty.
They actually put out Battlefield.
Okay, yeah. So this is coming out all in part two, where we talk about Project Crazy Bitch and how...
Yes.
How responsible is it to raise your daughter as a princess? Is this the beginning of a elitist point of view, you know, a us and them mentality, separating the deserving from the non-deserving, you know? And I really get deep into how pathological this princess programming can get in the way of the epidemic of narcissism that's rising. And this has been on the cover of Psychology Today, you know, narcissists up since 2000. The year 2000, and that's exactly when they released their princess line.
Yeah, it's just like a bunch of different Barbie dolls. It's so weird that we market that way to kids. Do you think that is controlled and designed, or is that just us adults projecting our weird insecurities on kids?
Oh no, this is all planned out years before we were even born.
Dang.
So One thing I wanted to say was there's this esoteric movie called The Holy Mountain, and I kind of write about this scene, this one scene. The lady's riding down the street, and it's like a clown fanfare, and all the kids are following it, and they're handing out all the toys to the children, and they ride up to this giant factory where she pulls off the clown makeup and reveals herself as a stern businesswoman who has a contract with the government to market toys to kids because they know that they're going to be wanting to go to war with this particular type of person 20 years in the future. So they villainize this one particular people to the kids so that they can get ready to kill them in the future.
Wow.
And it's crazy because, you know, toys have all, predicted lots of things. I mean, I write about this in Weird Stuff in the chapter called Psychology Inc. about how some board games of the pre-World War II era quite accurately predicted the combatants of the Allied and the Axis forces. So they're gearing up the toys before, you know, Pearl Harbor even happened to get people ready to for a war overseas.
Wow. And I mean, and not to mention that these companies, a company like Disney, who is supposed to care about kids and is making art for children, I mean, they, a lot of their cheap junk that they're making is being contracted out to sweatshops overseas. I mean, there are literally kids making, slave kids making kids' toys.
Exactly. And this is one thing that I really appreciated when I do some live talks. And sometimes there's kids in the audience. And when I get to this part where I show you that every time that you are buying corporate products, you are keeping other kids in slavery, like in factories in China and South America, and just like all the different Mickey Mouse dolls and Lion King sweatshirts and anything that you could think of just all comes from misery and slavery, and their conditions are the worst that you could ever even describe that they're working under to produce this crap, right? This mind control crap.
Yeah.
And the little kids, they really appreciate the information and they shun the toys after that. You know, they kind of look at it differently. They're like, I don't want to play with this anymore if that's where it came from. So as soon as you tell them what's going on, they'll do the right thing. And so I think parents aren't giving their kids enough credit in this culture.
I agree. They're a lot more inclined to take the moral road than the people who've already rationalized away.
Well, yeah, I mean, the adults, they're happy with the status quo. You know, they're comfortable. They don't have to face the things that the new generations have to face, like Fukushima and, you know, just all the devastation that we're inheriting right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, anyone who has a smartphone, I mean, those components are harvested in Africa by the same type of slave system that pulls diamonds out.
Right.
You know?
And
so you got to be a bit of a dick to have a phone.
You know, they even have safety nets installed on the sides of their buildings because of the suicide jumpers. Can't even take one more day of manufacturing your new iPhone that they just want to end it all. And so they had to put nets because they had too many people just jump off the top of the building.
Right. It's more economically viable to install nets than to just pay people a decent wage.
And speaking of this technology revolution, you know, in Japan, they actually have a word for dropping dead on the job. I don't know the word exactly right now, but it just literally means working yourself to death.
God, it's such a shame. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the plots of some of these Disney movies. I mean, I've heard you talk about Chicken Little before. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good analogy for the way we're viewed by the elite, is it not?
Mm. It's almost as if they can see, you know, well, they can see because they've been doing these studies for hundreds of years. People don't even know. We're so behind these think tanks, you know, these Tavistock Institutes and SRI. They've got people's mapped down to the finest detail of, you know, control mechanisms. So Chicken Little is interesting, and I do write about this in part one, because it's a story about this fox who wants to get into the secure fence to eat all the chickens, but he needs Chicken Little to get them to leave their enclosure. So he throws this block of wood with a pentagram painted on it over the fence and hits Chicken Little on the head, and Chicken Little says the sky is falling, right? And nobody believes him, and so they have to discredit the actual leader. His name's Cocky Locky, and get him to step down, and so Chicken Little can take over and lead all the chickens because he's the one that knows the sky is falling, and so he leads them down the path right into the fox's lair.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to be mean, but we see some people who just are continually threatening the population with imminent destruction, getting them all in a tizzy and never offering solutions. And I think this is, you know, what a Chicken Little would be. Somebody
totally
who's
agree.
Just using the fear-based media for their own gain. And just like Chicken Little, they think they're doing the right thing. Dooms.
Man, I mean, are there any other Disney movies you would cite as good examples of plots that, if you read between the lines, have something weird going on?
One I can think of right now is Tangled, the story about Rapunzel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a weird one because it has all these elements of it, of that she's not really the daughter of the person who's raising her. And I go into this a lot about how they are blaspheming the Holy Spirit by always killing the mother. And in Tangled, they use this protective mother who keeps her daughter, you know, basically locked up in a tower, make her into the bad witch who's trying to steal her soul, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so any child who watches this and then their mother tries to, you know, keep them inside or keep them reined in, they're thinking in the back of their mind, well,
rebel.
And so at the end of the movie, it comes out that she's actually a princess and that was the evil witch. and she really belongs in the city. And this is another thing that I want to point out is like the cityfication of people and the worship of this like city state. You know, you've got people worshiping New York City like it's the best place on earth, or any city really. Yeah. And so they're trying to get people out of nature and into this tighter control grid. You know, you've got in San Francisco them building micro mini apartments. I mean, how much space are they going to cramp us into now?
I know. It's messed up.
So they lure the little girls you know, away from their home and into the big city where they're just exposed to all kinds of perversion you could think of.
One I've always thought was kind of interesting from a conspiratorial standpoint is Monsters, Inc. I mean, it's a movie about monsters that feed on the energy that's put out by fear in children.
Exactly. And then at the end of the movie, they realize that it's laughter that's more powerful than fear, right?
That's also a great point.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's a perfect analogy of, you know, these, whatever you want to call them, the other dimensional powers, you know, these soul-sucking, psychic, vampiric, energy stealing monsters, basically from Universe B is what the OTO would call it. But they do live off fear, and that's some kind of weird creational evolutionary thing that if the energy is produced, there's going to be something that lives off it. You know, they find organisms that live off of anything, basically, and so these things live off fear.
Yeah,
and they grow stronger by fear.
Well, I've heard you say once, and I thought it was a really interesting tie-in, that once you convince these little girls that they're princesses, you connect them with the elite and royalty, which paves the way for all this tween obsession with vampires and blood-sucking demon-type entertainment icons.
Right. So, yeah, that goes into kind of David Icke and what I like to call it's all relative, and the commonalities between vampires and what they are outlining as this... The shape-shifting reptilian entities that take people over, you know. I mean, as far back as there's been history, there's been tales about serpents and serpent people. So you can't say this is just crazy talk.
Yeah. I mean, Cars is... I hadn't seen Cars when it came out, but I just saw it fairly recently. And that's another one that's got quite a few strange elements in it. I mean, basically, he's put into a work program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is all about being cycled through the system, the prison system, which is a big thing now that they're privatizing all the prisons. That's big money for people to get arrested. They want people to rebel. They want them to, you know, commit crimes. They want them in the prison. They want them to listen to their rap music and think that this is normal. It's just like, I think America has more prisoners than anybody else in the world combined. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it really is sad, that prison industry.
Right, but it's like almost everybody you meet has been cycled through the jail system once at least.
Yeah, I've been close, but they've never got me. they find me a lot. I get fined like nobody's business, but I still have kept the shackles off my wrists and ankles.
Yeah.
But you had mentioned the destruction of the mother agenda that Disney might seem to have. And when I think about it, I cannot come up with any classic Disney movies that have a strong mother role, except maybe The Lion King, but that one still has some serious family destruction going on.
Well, they still killed his dad, right? That's
right,
the classic Osiris set in Horus story, right? Where the evil uncle kills the sun king and the boy comes back for the throne. That's as old as Egypt.
Yeah, I hear that about a lot of Disney movies. I'm not very well versed in the ancient stories, but I hear that all the time, that a lot of the Disney movies are just retellings of those old tales.
Well, there's one more point about The Lion King is that they stole it from a Japanese guy. And I mean, just point by point, you can Google that. It was like Simba the White Lion, they called him, and they just... entirely ripped that thing off. But yeah, it's not just Disney who kills the mother. It's anybody. I mean, any TV show, any movie. I want to start, you know, taking some kind of statistic on this because I know it's more times than not that, you know, if the mom's not killed as part of the story in a horrific way, think of like, you know, Anakin Skywalker. You know, finally gets there to rescue his mom and she drops dead.
Which is now under the Disney umbrella also.
Right, Star
Wars. It wasn't at the time.
And Wizard of Oz. is all under control of the mouse now.
Well,
but pay attention. Okay, so sometimes they'll just have a picture of the dead mom on the mantle and be like, "Remember when your mom was alive?" But it's morbid. It's super subtle and it's also super grotesque. So I am going to start keeping a notebook. But I have this entire page of movie posters, which I know where the mom is, you know, the focal point. The dead mother is the focal point of the story.
Well, I mean, even just the ones I can think of off the top of my head, Disney movies. I mean, Pinocchio, of course, has no mother. It's just an old guy who wishes he had a son. I mean, Little Mermaid, I think it's just her dad, right?
Right.
Dumbo is a orphan, I think.
Well, Dumbo is another horrific tale where they tear him away from his mother and she dies.
Oh, yeah. It's like evil circus.
Right. Yeah. Guys. And so, I mean, try and watch that song Baby Mine or whatever when she's rocking the baby through the bars and they can't, because she can't get to him and without tearing
yes,
out.
I
it's
do
impossible.
That.
And this is soft trauma based mind control, you know? Like,
man.
I was really young when I saw my first movie and it was the dinosaur one, Land Before Time. And
it's
all about
he's just trying to get to his parents. That's a disenfranchised family.
Okay, now check it out, okay, because it's seared into my memory for all time. Because you know you're watching this little story and the bubbles on the screen and there's frogs and there's newts and there's dinosaurs and they're all migrating because of a great famine, and then this earthquake happens and and then they get chased by this T-Rex, and the mom fights off the T-Rex, and the when the baby finds the mom, she's on the verge of death, you know, and
yes.
She says, "If you, I'll always be with you, even if I can't see you, can't see me." And at this point in the movie, I'm freaking out as a child.
Yeah,
and then the neighbor who took me to see the movie, I wasn't even with my parents. He's like, "Do you need to call your mom? Go home." I'm like, "Nah, I'm all right. You know, I'll stick it out." But this is like
this.
Forever change type of experience for me, right?
Yeah, that's pretty raw.
The death of the mother is the most traumatic thing I've ever seen in my whole life. On how big is this screen to a kid, right? Giant. So I go home and then I have to have this Littlefoot stuffed toy from the movie because he was an orphan, and I witnessed this trauma, and I had to give it to him because it was like some form of self therapy. And I
Man.
Think a lot of kids go through this type of, you know, subconsciously, but it's not just the ultimate plush toy marketing strategy. This is like soft trauma-based mind control for sure.
Yeah, and in that movie, they're seeking out tree stars,
mm-hmm.
which that's could be pentagram symbolism.
For sure.
I don't know. But what about Bambi? There's a traumatic killing
exactly.
of the mother.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And Bambi's interesting, too, because that's based on a book by, I think it's German or Bavarian pornographer, Felix Salten. So Google, yeah, Bambi and Felix Salten, and that's a saucy story, too.
Man. And I guess orphans are big. Aladdin, Jungle Book.
Jasmine doesn't have a mother, does she?
No. Oh, yeah. Jasmine doesn't even have a mother. Not only does Aladdin not have any parents.
Cinderella does not. She has a wicked stepmother. So not only is the mom absent, but now the role is being vilified, just like
yeah.
Ursula or Cruella de Vil.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess Beauty and the Beast doesn't really... Their parents don't come into that. Although I think she does have an aggressive dude.
Well, no, she has to be the slave to the beast because of her father.
Yeah.
So he'll let her father go. She'll agree to be the beast slave.
Yeah. Well, that's also kind of that dangerous is sexy kind of thing too. That vampire thing.
Right. And it's weird because in that movie, in the beginning opening scene, she's singing a song about books and going to the library and checking out books and reading fairy tales. And so... It's kind of like fairy tale inception, you know. She's got some predictive programming going on right in the movie where she's programmed by a fairy tale to go off and find a prince.
Yeah, wow. I mean, Alice in Wonderland, I think that's Alice in Wonderland, Sword in the Stone, Peter Pan, Jungle Book. Most of those people are orphans, or I think Alice just doesn't connect with reality. She just wants to go down that rabbit hole.
Right. And Alice in Wonderland is also one of the major monarch mind control themes because of its inverted reality. Because in programming, they want you to feel like pleasure is pain, hot is cold, you know, anything that's opposite or inverted. So Alice in Wonderland goes great along because she never knows if she's in a dream. And this is a big part of the monarch system, too, is keeping people in a trance state and never knowing what's real and what is fantasy.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, Disney movies are starting to seem less creative to me all of a sudden.
Well, they're not creative at all. They need our creativity. They're dark and they need... They have to inject some innocent creativity in there sometimes, or they just recycle themselves to hell.
And I've heard that there's an element of their involvement is to replace our child's imagination with their version of it. Basically, you know, people are less creative when they absorb corporate media versus actually just being a kid.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is... defined as sorcery. So you've got what I outline in part one, the difference between a magician and a sorcerer. And a sorcerer is interested in bending other people's wills to serve mm-hmm. his own purposes. He believes he is the god on earth and every element and will should be subservient to him. Okay, so by using our imagination against us, this is how they are creating, you know, an army for the sorcerers, because the imagination and the will are the two things that any magic book will tell you are the mental faculties needed for the art of magic. And so Disney's slogan is, you know, Imagineering, they say, or imagination's at work, or, you know, how to capture your imagination is one of their slogans. So they're telling you exactly what they're doing.
Exactly, yeah. It is all about magic. I mean, the Wish Upon a Star, Jiminy Cricket song,
mm-hmm.
that could be a pentagram.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to know what to attribute value to and what's just a coincidence.
No, it's not a coincidence at all. And, When You Wish Upon a Star is pretty esoteric in itself, because of the pentagram is the, you know, magic 101, basically. So in any, like I said, any magic book is going to tell you, you start out with what is the pentagram. Mm-hmm. And it's used in all, you know, religions, all iconography of anything that you could think of. This pentagram keeps popping up at the heart of it. And so I go into a little bit in Weird Stuff Part 1. There's a little side page about the pentagram and the A-verse pentagram and how it relates to phi ratios and the shape of our galaxy and the shape of a sunflower and the golden mean and, you know, these numbers that keep popping up all the time in nature. And it's like has to do with mathematical laws of beauty, basically, and spirit. Because the four points represent the four elements, with the fifth point being spirit.
You know, it's just weird because when I read about sacred geometry or occult symbolism, it seems like the study is so in-depth and intense for what amounts to be subtle effects. To me, they seem subtle. But then you look at the organizations that use them, and they're very huge. You know,
right.
They're very successful and powerful organizations. So it's weird because I've watched all these Disney movies growing up, and I don't know how it's affected me all that negatively.
Well, once you recognize the triggers, it's harder for them to work. And this comes straight from mind control survivor Cisco Wheeler in the book by Fritz Springmeier. And they say, if you can explain to somebody what is a trigger, then their mind can integrate it and realize, you know, not to go in a trance or not to be manipulated when they see this certain thing. So I would recommend watch the Disney movie and read Weird Stuff. So you can
yeah.
get both.
You should think about doing a series of commentary tracks.
I would do a Mystery Science Theater type. You
yes.
know. heckling or you know, basically just explaining what I see in the movie, because we go through it all the time. We're like, well, look at what they're doing here, and every movie we see, basically, we're just ripping it apart.
That would be awesome to listen to.
Well, I don't know if I mentioned this too much, but it's an interesting story and it goes along with what we're talking about, but Mars Needs Moms, we met the primary actor in that, Dan Fogler, and he the movie hadn't come out yet, and we were just chatting, and I was telling him, like I said, you know, they always kill the mom in Disney especially. And he's like, well, I'm in a Disney movie. And I said, what's it called? He said, Mars Needs Moms. And so this is a story about them kidnapping mothers and taking them to Mars to program these nanny bots, because they've split the civilization into male and female. And the females are very militant and they live above ground. And the males are thrown away in the trash and they live in the dump below. And so this boy gets his mother kidnapped and taken to Mars, and he has to rescue them and integrate the society of Mars in the process, because when they go into ancient caverns where all the old ones used to live, they find a stella portrait of a nuclear family, mom, dad, and baby, and they realize that this is really the way to be. And this goes back, you know, you can see this in Masonry with the 47th proposition of Euclid. You see this with Isis, Osiris, and Horus. You know, this Trinity is a holy thing, right? And they actually, Dan Fuller told me they yanked the movie early because, well, we don't know why, right? But I think it's because they were portraying this Holy Trinity as a solution.
Yeah, maybe the movies, they make a ton of movies. You know, they're a huge studio. Maybe the ones that end up with a positive message don't get nearly the press or the push that the ones that fit the agenda do.
Well, heck no. And that's, you know, the practice of the whole system. I mean, that.
But it's just odd because, I mean, obviously a company like Disney is very systematic and their influence is pretty widespread. But the effects of these techniques seems, I don't know, fairly subtle. I mean, are there any, by studying, if I were to sit there and study some of these sorcery techniques that have maybe contributed to the success and the influence of Disney and corporations like them, are there techniques I could apply to this show to get the same kind of effect? For example?
Yes. What do you mean, Scientology?
Do I need to put more symbols in my logo?
Well, you need to recruit some celebrities. He just reminded me, L. Ron Hubbard of Scientology made a policy in the early days because he knew that people fall, like I said, they follow the stars. And he had every one of his Dianetics, you know, auditors go out and pick a celebrity and hound them and bring them to Scientology and not take no for an answer, just so he could get that press.
Huh. Interesting. I need some press, that's for sure. We all need some press, right?
Well, okay, so this goes perfectly into this new, I don't know, what do you want to call it? A movement, an awareness group that I call Release the Stars. Mm-hmm. And I've written a little manifesto, and that's going to be up on Freeman TV when we release the part two book. And basically what it is just, you know, kind of a support group for anybody to come forward feeling like they've been through the Monarch programming, maybe like Corey Feldman or Roseanne Barr, or, you know, any whistleblower can come maybe do a show or a podcast or just help raise awareness for what we're trying to do. And it's going to be called Release the Stars, because it's funny, in the early days of Hollywood, they kept those stars locked up basically in contracts, and they were the servants to the studios, and they weren't allowed to have any kind of life. They were dictated because, you know, they had it down to a science back in the 30s with Edward Bernays and this propaganda machine that Sigmund Freud and Bernays brought forth. So these studios would keep the stars, you know, basically under lock and key. And I just kind of want to bring that spirit, and that's where I thought of the name.
That's cool. I mean, On the subject of celebrities, what do you think of Russell Brand? I mean, he's obviously made a big splash lately. I know you've studied him back when he was with Katy Perry, and he's got the Mark of the Beast as a symbol of that show.
It's true.
Is he controlled opposition, or do you think he's a legitimate artist who just wants the best for everyone?
Both. I mean, they use people, and you can't help but be used.
Against his will, yeah.
And so it's like anything you say, they can spin it however you want. But I do think that Russell Brand has some powerful connections. I don't think he's free of the network of the oppressors. Or, you know, there's an interesting YouTube clip of him and Katy Perry on the red carpet, and they're trying to interview them, and he flashes her a little talisman that says obey, and you can kind of see her switch her personality a little bit. And really? People have shared that. Yeah, I actually have a article on Freeman TV. It's called, I think it's Hollywood Mind Control. Yeah, all about Russell Brand and Katy Perry and how I believe that they didn't want Katy and Russell together for some reason.
That's what makes me think that he might be legit.
Yeah, when they got together, they seemed like they were very happy and in love and dedicated, and they were talking about how they were all healing, and Russell said he was off drugs and doing yoga, and he was happy with monogamy. And so this all comes at the time where Katy is going on her first tour, you know, the California Dreams tour, and this is like no joke. And this is where you find out that when you sell your soul to the devil for rock and roll, he is a literal slave driver, and he's going to work you to death. And so she's doing like all these concerts flying. I think she had, you know, a concert every 2 days or something like that. That's just horrendous. And she, on her off days, she would always try and fly in to get to where he was to see him and spend a little time with him. And you can see in her, her documentary, Part of Me, her chase of Russell around the globe, at one point she wakes up and she asks her handlers, you know, can I see my calendar for my relationship days? And they're like, well, don't worry about that, you know, I'll handle it. And at one point she's just, you know, broken down into tears. It's like 10 minutes before showtime and she's not ready at all, and she's just bawling, blabbering, because she's, you know, had a fight with Russell or some kind of argument. And they give her a trinket from her trinket box, and it's some necklace that Russell gave her, and she just goes off into tears again. And, you know, we really feel for these people because they're real people, you know, and they're really suffering under all the stress of this. It's not glamorous, and it's not fun, and it's not, you know, freedom. It's really slavery. And so you can see her, she's, you know, wiping the tears off her eyes right up until her little peppermint breasts start to spin when she goes on stage. And she flips her personality and puts on her best show for the crowd. But, you know, inside she's just dying because she misses Russell Brand.
Well, I love the parody of that female pop star in Get Him to the Greek. It's essentially a parody of the Katy Perry, Miley Cyrus type.
Yeah, I think they met on the filming of that movie.
Could be. She might have actually played that actress. I really don't know.
Whole relationship being torn apart, and it's not because these two didn't love each other. You know, there's handlers, there's controllers, there's manipulators. And this is about the time, you know, Russell's having like David Icke and Laura Eisenhower,
right,
and you Graham know really kind of trying to push the bounds of perception a little bit and try and bring these ideas to the mainstream. So maybe they didn't want them together, who can say, but you know, there is that element that now Russell is blown up as a bastion for the truth movement, and I see all my friends who've been doing this for 20 years just shake their head like, I wish I had this kind of press, you know.
Yeah, it was that kind of clout. And it's true. But I thought that was a pretty selfless thing to say when he was like, you know, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said. And he rattles off the authors that he really admires and respects. And he's like, these guys, you know, are the ones who taught me these things.
Yeah, I don't judge anybody until I actually meet them. And then I just never know. I take them however they treat me. But what was I going to say about? Oh, yeah, he did use, you know, the Mark of the Beast for his Brand X. And so this is kind of like, what's going on? And I don't think Russell Brand knows who the heck Nodens is or who the heck Alistair, maybe he knows who Crowley is, but I don't think he's ever read Kenneth Grant to see that, yeah, the Mark of the Beast is this O in the X, and it symbolizes the androgynous god, you know, of Nodens or Pan. I don't think he knows this.
It's the marketing experts, the corporate people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's weird, though, because when you put that stamp on it, it just makes it makes you a little bit skeptical of the message.
But yeah, I know.
And also, it just seems like if he was really disrupting things, it'd be just so easy to kill him.
Well, you can't kill somebody because then you make him more popular. You know, there's games of strategy going on here. This is an epic chess game. And so they know that if they assassinate someone, then they're going to get way more press than they ever could if they just left him alone.
Well, just before we went on, I actually read a pretty interesting article about, Brittany Murphy, she was an actress, but she was a B-level actress. I don't think she was super popular, but she died, and it was apparently a drug overdose. Well, and I guess they've looked into it, and it seems like she was poisoned. And maybe you've looked at this.
Her dad said it was heavy metal poison.
Yeah, that's weird. I mean,
yeah. True. And also, these girls are used for, you know, ritual sacrifice as well.
It would be so awesome. It'd probably be my favorite show to watch ever. If you could get into some situation where it's like a Jay Leno late night show and you can get people like Christina Aguilera, Katy Perry to come out and really disclose things and talk in a candid manner, that would be probably the most entertaining thing I could ever see.
I would hope so. I mean, that's where I hope I'm going with Release the Stars. You know, let's get their attention and hear their stories, because ultimately I feel for them and I don't want to see them suffering. I don't want to see people in China suffering in factories. I don't want to see people in the Congo dying for blood diamonds. You know, I want everyone to be
right.
Well cared for. So
I was trying to make the point to a friend of mine the other day, and I was like, you know, using an extreme example. I'm like, look, if we have a pedophile who rapes kids and he says, look, man, I'm sorry. I don't want to rape kids. I don't want kids to be hurt, but I got to do what I want to do, what I like to do. You would lock that guy up. You would be like, you're crazy, man. That's totally irrational logic. But yet we all carry smartphones, which are, you know, the minerals for these things are picked out of Africa by slave kids. And we use that same logic. We say, yeah, it sucks. I don't want slave kids to have to do it. But hey, I want an iPhone. I got to have it. You know, it's the same logic. But because there's degrees of separation, we don't feel like such assholes.
You got to have your Air Jordans no matter who makes
yeah.
them, right?
Oh.
And then complain about slavery.
Yeah, it's a real shame.
Yeah. And another thing I wanted to bring about Katy Perry was that she was used heavily for military programming and Obama programming.
Really?
Oh, for sure. She's got a video called Part of Me, and you can go to my my Facebook curated Facebook page for Weird Stuff and see that I've kind of mashed up these two videos. One is Katy Perry Part of Me, where she breaks up with her boyfriend and joins the army. And the video is about her going through boot camp and, you know, becoming a stronger woman, blah, blah, blah. And then the second video is the story of this poor vet lady who was raped by her commanding officer and dishonorably discharged. And then they botched a surgery. They tried to take her ovary, and instead they took her colon. And so she had to have, you know, she's
oh my
just
God.
Screwed
out.
Up. So it's like the programming versus the reality, right? Of what they tell you is going to happen to you in the military and what actually happens. They treat you like garbage and they mind control you. So, you know, you can see Katy Perry coming out in concert dresses in the shape of a ballot during the election with Obama checkmarked on it. You know, it says Mitt Romney, Obama, and Obama has the check next to it. She had several of those dresses. They used her in like USO shows and what was the other? I know she had several Obama dresses, but you know, so this is, I mean, Obama, how do you think he got elected? Okay, so he's using the celebrities.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a huge movement. Mm-hmm.
People follow the stars.
That was definitely, there was a spell cast over all the mainstream media on that guy.
Man, well, you know, one thing I wanted to talk about before we go, you talk about fighting back and coping with all these psychological attacks by practicing slack magic. You want to give us some details about that?
Okay, this is, yeah, a chapter you can find in Weird Stuff Part 1, a treatise on slack magic, and there's 7 formulas that I kind of made up because I thought, you know, in my weird mind that magic should be easy and it should be effortless and it should be, you know, kind of like magic.
Yeah.
And so I outlined these 7 principles, and I hope to be adding 3 more in the upcoming books about slack magic. But yeah, it's sort of like Christianity meets Church of the Subgenus meets the Tao.
Hmm. Interesting.
And it's the antithesis of black magic. And so there's no ritual involved. And that's, you know, kind of where the slack comes in. It's all kind of based on the miraculous and how many miracles can you manifest for yourself by just treating yourself and others right.
Pinky's out to steal your slack.
Yeah, he said. So it's funny because in the Church of the Subgenius, a pinky is a person who can't see the conspiracy. And they say that the ultimate conspiracy of the world is to rob you of your slack or your time or your free time or your imagination. Amen. You know, the slack can be replaced by the Tao. It's a very, you know, shape-shifting type of word or philosophy. It can mean several different things. Whoever is pondering upon whatever slack means, it can mean different things to different people. But for me, it's just, you know, like that free time of creativity where you everything is in order and you can say, okay, what am I about? What is my art? What is my life? What is my purpose? How can I help?
Right. But you got to shut off the TV and the radio to get that headspace, to get that clarity.
Right. And so we talk about a little bit about the fool at the end of Slack Magic and how I think that everyone could learn by being foolish. And, you know, it's not a person who doesn't know anything. It's just kind of an innocent soul who's not intending any harm. And, you know, the fool in the medieval times was the person who was able to tell the truth because he did it with laughter and he did it with, you know, tongue in cheek a little bit, and everyone thought he was foolish, so he was welcomed everywhere.
Interesting. Well, Jamie, it has been a real pleasure. It's about that time. I love talking to you about this stuff. It's pretty obvious that Disney and Hollywood have some pretty dark agendas that are hidden behind a lot of bright colors, glitter, and talking animals. But hopefully we can talk to you again as more issues of Weird Stuff come out. Is there a time frame on that? Where can people pick up Weird Stuff?
Yeah, you can go to freemantv.com and you can click on the the button where you see this like a Pope sorcerer type man with a robotic iPad robot.
Yeah, I love that.
Enchanting the children in front of a TV. And it says buy now right on the front page, you know, Weird Stuff. And then part 2, I'm hoping will be out in January, maybe. I'm working really hard on it, and it's going to be super good.
That is awesome. I know that publishing a bunch of full color editions like you have isn't cheap. So people, if you're interested in the things we talked about today, please help out Jamie and Freeman, continue the research and continue to put out great stuff. There's so much money in sports and movies and video games, but I think it's much more entertaining just to try to get to the bottom of things in this crazy messed up world. So help them out. It's great stuff. And Christmas is coming. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's the perfect book, like I said, just to shove in your weird relative's hand that you don't know how to talk to about these things and, you know, maybe have them flip through. And there's all sorts of images of popular culture and internet memes. There's even a little puzzle in there. So I designed it to be innocent looking and not look like some giant tome on the destruction of planet Earth. It's just weird stuff.
Right on. Yeah, well, thanks again, Jamie. It's been great. I guess I'll let you get out of here, but keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. There we have it, people. Jamie Hanshaw. What a great chat that was. Please remember to share the show and review it where you can. The only press a show like this will ever get is from the people, and thanks for taking it as far as you have already. Just a couple weeks left in the first THC Money Bomb. You can get in the game and help the show at the same time by donating at thehiresidechats.com/donate. So keep doing what you do, and I'll see you next week. Your move, Hollywood.
Chihuahua.
On the endless round, it's the sun.